Just a quick word from our sponsor before we jump into today's episode. Optimizing your internal processes can often be a huge unlock for streamlining revenue and getting you and your team, if you have one, out of a manual process. If you're looking to reduce costs and headaches in one fell swoop, consider graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere, and you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days, so proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time, like NetSuite, are kind of a no-brainer. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/SPI. netsuite.com/SPI. Once again, netsuite.com/SPI. And now a quick word from our sponsor before we start the show. Ready to earn sustainable income while creating the work you're passionate about? Get started with Memberful. Whether you teach online courses, host a podcast, run a blog, or write a newsletter, Memberful has all the tools you need to unlock revenue and deeply connect with your audience through subscription membership. Their platform allows you to easily gate content, communicate with your audience, and tier membership access directly on your own website. Plus, with Memberful, there's no need to change your workflow. They work seamlessly and integrate with the tools you already use, including MailChimp, Discord, Zapier, ConvertKit, Google Analytics, and more. Utilize their powerful built-in features and dashboards and watch your business grow. The best part? Memberful gives you full control and ownership of your audience, your brand, and your business. Get started for free at memberful.com/SPI. One more time, that's memberful.com/SPI. You know, things have changed quite a bit since I first started business back in 2008. I started out with a blog, and I could just, in a way, hide behind the blog and my keyboard and do well, and I did. And then we started to find that people wanted to learn more about who it is that was creating this content. And that's where I started to show up on YouTube and on podcasts and other forms, live streams and social media. And this is when we start to build trust and authority. And now communities are a big part of how people learn and with each other. Online courses and how people learn has changed quite a bit. For a while, it was all about as much content as possible, right? Like the more content in an online course, the more valuable it should be. But that's actually not true. I once heard recently a case for somebody who was saying, well, the reason why I charge more because I have less stuff in my content, or because it only takes me 10 minutes to do something for you versus 100 minutes, is I'm charging you for the 10 years it's taken for me to be able to do this well and with quality in just 10 minutes, right? Which is really interesting. But online courses specifically, right? It was always like, okay, well, 60 hours of video and 500 worksheets. And I think we all know now that that's just the wrong way to do it. We want things that are definitely more efficient and more to the point, and less work, the better. But even beyond that, online courses have taken a little bit of a different route now, where it's not just about the content, it's about the experience in and around that content. It's not just the setup and then, hey, go and get this content and, you know, you're on your own now. It can be guided. And there's this thing called cohort-based courses. Cohort meaning a group of people or group of students. And this was actually something that was, it's been around for a while, obviously. There's always been cohort-based everything. I mean, classrooms in school are cohort-based, right? But when it comes to online, cohort-based courses were really made famous by people like Seth Godin. And what a lot of people don't know is Seth Godin and his program Alt-MBA, which is very famous. A lot of very successful people have, in fact, gone through it. It was actually invented by somebody else. Her name is Wes Cao, and she's our special guest here today. And I and a couple of my teammates on Team SPI had the privilege of working and learning with Wes. In fact, we took a cohort-based course from Wes and her team to learn about how to do cohort-based courses, because this is something that we actually do now. We've run several, we call them boot camps, but they're essentially cohort-based courses where we lead a group of people through our courses, but in a more structured format with accountability, with working hours, with group collaboration. And we're going to talk today with Wes about exactly what this means, how it looks like, how to sell it, how to position it, and how and why you could charge a lot more for it, and why you get better results, how to structure these lessons and all this stuff. We're going to unpack it all today from the inventor of the modern cohort-based format, Wes cow over at Maven. Maven.com is a place where you can go and set up your cohort-based course that you could sell, and then you can house your students in. And we're going to check that all out today with Wes in just a moment, right after the intro. Here we go.
Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, where it's all about working hard now so you can sit back and reap the benefits later. And here's your host. He wants to build a secret underground bunker with an arcade below his house, Pat Flynn.
Hey, and real quick, our sponsor today is Uplift Desk, creators of office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. If you haven't tried a sit/stand desk before, this offer from Uplift is the perfect opportunity. Plus, you can support the show at the same time. Visit UpliftDesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. A desk should fit the user, right? Which is exactly why Uplift Desk has a ton of customization options. They're stable, the materials are solid. I mean, just the choices of material alone are incredible, all the way from laminate to eco to bamboo and even solid wood. The option to stand while working is just healthier, better circulation, better movement, which helps to reduce all kinds of different health risks and repetitive strains. And over a million customers have chosen Uplift Desk for their innovative designs, direct to consumer pricing, same day shipping. They can even give you free accessories with every desk. Uplift is a great deal, and they're built to last and include an industry-leading 15-year warranty, free shipping, free return shipping if you need to do that as well. So go to UpliftDesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/SPI to get 5% off your entire order. What's up, everybody? Pat Flynn here, and welcome to session 513 of the Smart Passive Income Podcast. I'm so excited for this episode because we get to chat with a person who we learn from. Wes Cow from Maven.com, and she's going to unpack everything for you about how to create a cohort-based course, how to launch it, how to run it, all that kind of stuff. And we'll talk about the history of them too, and just why there's something you should consider when it comes to what you have going on and what you're offering your people online. And especially if you have online courses like we do, just regular, general, self-paced online courses. I mean, this is what has been our business for the past 4 years. You can add cohort-based courses on top of them. And that's exactly what we've done. We've had Power Up Podcasting for so long. And then we added a boot camp on top of that for, I think it's a 6 to 8 week program to help people through it. We did the same thing with Email Marketing Magic. And we also ran a cohort-based course for the first time first before creating the digital version of that course. And that's called Heroic Online Courses, in fact, where we teach people how to create a digital online course. And man, the results are unmatched. The relationships that are built are unreal. And those groups are still together today, even though it's been weeks and almost months past some of them. They're still together helping each other out. It's so amazing. And you hardly get that with just digital courses. So here she is. This is Wes Cow from Maven.com. Let's talk all about it, all about a cohort-based course program. Wes, welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Pat. Really excited to be here.
I'm excited to not just dive into your story, but get into cohort-based courses because this is what you teach. You're the co-founder of Maven.com. And I got to say, just up front here and publicly, thank you so, so much because what you've given me and my team as far as education for helping people with cohort-based courses has been absolutely amazing and life-changing. We just wrapped up a big cohort-based course for us. And thanks to you and your help, it's just gotten so much great feedback. So thank you so much for that.
Absolutely. It was amazing working with you and your team. You guys were awesome.
I got to say though, cohort-based courses and being a student of the one that you put on for us, it's a completely different experience than just taking a DIY online course. I'd love to know a little bit about how you got into where you're at now and what drove you into teaching and creating Maven.
My journey into online learning started in 2014 when I packed up my bags in San Francisco and moved across the country to New York to work with Seth Godin. Initially, I joined as special projects lead. And one of my first projects was building a Udemy course for Seth. And as I started looking into the world of MOOCs, I realized that completion rates were super low, anywhere between 3 to 7%. So a bunch of people were starting optimistic, excited to take courses, but a tiny percentage of people were actually staying long enough to finish them. Seth and I started batting around some ideas for what are ways that we could potentially flip this on its head. Were MOOCs really the end all be all? And we started playing around with a couple different ideas. And we thought, you know, what if we literally did the exact opposite of what MOOCs do as a start? So instead of it being everything being asynchronous, where you are watching videos by yourself, what if we had no pre-recorded content and everything was live and you were doing it with a group of people instead of solo? And what if instead of it being affordable and inexpensive, MOOCs are $10 to $50 a course, what if the course were expensive enough that students felt like they had skin in the game and it would help keep them accountable? What if instead of passive content consumption, it was all about active hands-on learning? So instead of watching an expert tell you what to do, you actually put those lessons into practice yourself with feedback, with time for iteration, with time for practice. So you were discussing, debating, role-playing with students around you who were equally excited about the topic. And putting this all together led to the Alt MBA. It initially started as a project that we were going to do once and see how it would go. And I was personally skeptical in the beginning. I knew that when you brought people together in a room, that, you know, when you're breathing the same air, you feel transformed learning together. But I wasn't sure if we could replicate this online. And at the time, Slack and Zoom were still fairly new in the mainstream. And people, you know, weren't really sure, you know, can I meet strangers on the internet with video? Can I really learn deeply with a group of people who I've never met? And from day one of the Alt MBA, when we got everyone together in Slack, everyone together in Zoom, in their learning groups, it was just pure magic. People were driving, they were connecting, they were talking with each other, they were DMing each other, and it just took off. And so for me, that was a really exciting turning point where I realized there was something about this format that was really, really special. For the next 3 years, Seth and I built the Alt MBA from the ground up. I hired out a team, grew the alumni community to 500 cities in 45 countries. And after those 3 years, you know, there was another question which popped up, which was the Alt MBA an anomaly in some way? Was it something about Seth's content, about the audience we were working with that made this all work? Or was this a format that could be replicated with other creators, other experts, other functions, verticals, and topics? So that's when I left the Alt MBA to do consulting directly with creators and helped Professor Galloway from NYU CERN build up Section 4 and his proprietary sprint. I worked with the co-founders of Morning Brew, Alex and Austin, to build their Morning Brew Accelerator course. Worked with William Ury, the negotiations expert from Harvard, who worked with President Carter to turn his material into a core-based course. Worked with David Prell, Tiago Forte. Worked with a bunch of creators on, you know, a bunch of different verticals, and proved out the concept that, yes, this actually does work with different verticals. Which brings us here to Maven, starting Maven last fall, and now working with amazing creators like yourself and your team, 80-some creators now in our current cohort who are teaching to build core-based courses, and just seeing the field expand and seeing creators realize that, hey, this is an amazing way for me to share my knowledge and monetize my expertise while building my community has been really, really exciting.
That is incredible. I mean, what a resume. And for those of you who are listening, you're like, okay, you keep hearing this term MOOC. What is that? That is short for massive open online course, right? And a cohort-based course is essentially the opposite. It's not massive and it's not open. It feels more closed. And as a result, the members who are in there can feel closer together and work closely together. And I know this having just gone through your cohort-based course through Maven. Can you describe for us what are the specific things about the cohort-based course that are different from the MOOCs that really allow these students to succeed and excel within it? What are the big differences that you just can't get in a DIY kind of situation?
With MOOCs, there's almost too much freedom. So I think all of us have experienced procrastinating, have experienced saying we want to do something and then acting against our own best interests. So I personally have signed up for a bunch of different MOOCs over the years. I think I have a hand lettering calligraphy course in Skillshare somewhere and a classical music course in Udemy. And I've taken maybe a lecture or watched half a video before saying, oh, you know, there's something else I got to do. I'm going to come back to this. And because I can go back to it at any time because it's evergreen and it's on demand, all these other things that pop up that are distracting, that feel more urgent, take me away from going back to completing that course. So the thing about core-based courses, because they have a set start and end date, and you're doing it with a group of people, there's way more of a sense of urgency that compels you to focus while the course is in session. So if the course is 2 weeks or 4 weeks or 3 days, during that period of time, you feel much more focused on the course than if, you know, it lasted forever and you could really go back to it forever. So that's one piece. I think the other piece is the community element. I think that people were never meant to learn alone, solo, processing ideas themselves. We learn so much better when we are surrounded by people who are excited about learning the same thing as we are. There's definitely an emotional and social element to learning that isn't just about knowledge transfer and facts. If it were just about that, then we could all get textbooks on any topic, read through them without ever feeling burnt out and just learn anything we want to. But that's really not the way that we learn. And I think with cohort-based courses, the community aspect, the peers, the feedback, coaches, if the course has coaches, all of these elements serve as hooks to keep students coming back, to keep students accountable. And it really holds the instructor and the course creator to a higher standard too. I talk about the content hierarchy of BS, where the base of the triangle is tweets, and then above it's blog posts, podcasts, or Clubhouse. And then at the tip of the triangle, the very top, it's core-based courses, because there's less room to hide. With a course, your students might ask you questions in front of 100 other students, and they might question your material, or they might go down a rabbit hole. So that live element adds a lot more of a temporal urgency to the learning, and it also increases the stakes to make sure that the creator themselves has their act together, that their material is defensible, that they have expertise to back up what they're teaching, because students could potentially challenge them, you know, when they're live. And that opens up a lot of great discussion where both the creator learns something new and then students are also teaching back and teaching each other. So it's bi-directional as opposed to one-directional. And that all adds that urgency and community feel that gets students much more excited about the material.
That's so great. And I know that when you're in a cohort-based course, you can feel that excitement. But I'd love to talk, before we get into the nuances of perhaps how to structure a CBC, how does one sell a cohort-based course to an audience when it is like, okay, this happens at this time, on this date? It's very specific. And I know that one of the benefits of selling a DIY or a MOOC is, like you said, you could take it at any time. And that is of benefit to, for example, a potential student, because they can fit it in when they can fit it in. How do you sell the idea of, hey, this is when classes happen, this is time that you'll have to allocate? It feels on the front end like it's going to be a lot more than what you might have to expect out of a DIY. How do you sell that? How do you position it?
If you think about traditional learning, almost all of it is cohort-based. So K through 12, higher education, going to college. College started in the fall. You graduated in the spring. It was 4 years. There were times when you had to be in class. So this idea of learning in a cohort-based way is not new per se. It's more new to online learning, because MOOCs and DIY on-demand courses were kind of the only option for a while. With cohort-based courses, the live component definitely is an important piece. There are certain courses that run twice a year. So David Perrell's Rite of Passage, for example, Tiago Forte's Build a Second Brain, these all run twice a year. The Alt MBA runs four times a year. Anthony Pompliano, Pomp's crypto course on Maven, has been running every month and a half or so. It's only been 5 months since he's launched his first cohort, and he's already run four cohorts. So it really depends on the creator and how often you want to run your course. The live piece is definitely a feature and not a bug for the right type of student. So I think that on-demand DIY courses are amazing for a certain use case. If someone wants to learn on their own, they want that flexibility, they want to be able to take the course whenever they want to and, you know, mold it around their schedule, the DIY format is great. And even in our own course, the one that you and your team took, Pat, we're moving some of our material into pre-recorded videos. That opens up time during the live sessions that we do to spend time doing things that you can only do live. Group discussions, breakouts, guided exercises, giving feedback, doing live critiques so everyone can learn from us critiquing an instructor's project. So there are definitely use cases for doing pre-recorded. With the right type of student, a certain type of student, on the other hand, the live aspect that there are set start and end dates, that there is less flexibility, that's what helps that kind of student show up and actually do the work. Tiago, for example, I saw a tweet that he wrote, I think like last week, where he said that the only way that he can learn nowadays is cohort-based, that he just can't compel himself to learn, read, you know, watch videos, et cetera, without accountability in place somehow. I feel the same way. After experiencing and helping to build so many cohort-based courses, it's really hard for me to kind of go back to learning with purely DIY because I have a pretty short attention span. I get distracted easily. So those start and end dates, that's really part of what I'm paying for, is getting myself to show up, putting skin in the game. I think of it as a creator having a portfolio of different products, different digital offerings. And you might be selling, you know, ebooks on Gumroad. You might do, you might be tweeting or writing a free newsletter. You might have your DIY course, and then you might do coaching, and you might have a cohort-based course. So all of these offer something different to different segments of your target audience.
And that's exactly how we're positioning it as well. We have the cohort-based courses, in fact, on top of and in addition to the DIY versions of that already. We did a podcasting bootcamp, for example, which was a cohort-based situation on top of our pre-existing course. And in fact, the interesting thing about that was 100% of the students who took that cohort-based course were people who had already purchased the digital course and had yet to get started, which was just, again, they were just like, well, I bought it because it was something I needed, but I just didn't have the time, or I needed more structure and accountability. And here we go. Here's a CBC, and now they have a podcast. So even though it is a higher price, you're right. The live component is, in fact, a feature, not a bug. And I love how you frame that. Let's talk a little bit about the actual cohort-based lessons and modules. Like, how is this going to be structured? How is it typically run? And, you know, DIY, it's kind of simple, right? Modules and lessons, you watch them, you move on to the next one. But how is a cohort-based course structured for those of us who don't necessarily know even what that exactly looks like yet?
Cohort-based courses have a couple key components, and you can mix and match them in different ways based on what's the best way for your target student to learn this topic and based on your own preferences as a creator. I always like telling first-time course creators to start from those two places, because if you don't, there are so many variables and it's very easy to get overwhelmed. So with DIY courses, for example, it's mainly pre-recorded videos. You have unlimited time to get it right, and then you hit publish, and then it's set it and forget it. Whereas with a cohort-based course, the live component and the more premium price point add additional variables. And mainly, it increases expectations on the student side. If students, let's say, paid $20 for a course and it wasn't great, oh well, not too big of a deal. But let's say they paid $1,000 or $1,500 or, you know, $700 for a course, they automatically will have higher expectations for, you know, what is that experience? How much am I getting from that? In terms of all the different questions that a creator has to answer, some of the common ones are, how much should I charge for my course? How long should my course be? How narrow versus broad should the scope of my topic be? How many students should I aim for? What should the course's weekly schedule look like? So those are all a lot of questions that can be overwhelming. And the way that I usually recommend first-time course creators to start is, one, to think about your student transformation. What does your target student want to learn that is juicy, that they're willing to pay for, that they're really eager to learn from you specifically? So that's one. Second is, what are your own assets and constraints as a creator? Let's say you don't like messing with technology. You don't have a good design instinct, let's say, don't like messing with camera equipment, et cetera, then don't make production value a key selling point in your cohort-based course. There are plenty of courses that have great production value and plenty that have very poor production value and still are awesome and have a lot of students. If, on the other hand, you like tinkering with Photoshop, you like making slides, you nerd out about audiovisual equipment, then maybe production value is your selling point. So it really depends on your own areas of confidence and your own assets and levers. There are some creators who start off who already have an audience. That's great. That's an audience that you can market to. And you might set a higher student count initially. Let's say I want to have 100 or 150 students. Awesome. If you have an audience, then that's very doable. On the other hand, if you don't have much of an online presence yet, you're still building up your newsletter, you're still building up your online presence, then you might start with a slightly smaller student count. You might say, hey, I'm going to do 30 students for my first cohort, 20 or 30 students, see how it goes. And, you know, instead of trying to get all your students via Twitter and social media, you might say, you know, who in my network do I know that I can cross promote with? Can I do webinars and fireside chats to interview certain people who have audience bases in groups that I'm trying to tap into and get your initial students that way? So it really depends on what your initial assets are and what your constraints are and what your students are looking for from you. And from there, then you can say, all right, based on what my students are looking for, based on my own schedule, my strengths, my weaknesses, I think my course should be, my initial cohort should be a 3-day course because I want to get one cycle of course building under my belt. I'm going to start small with 20 to 30 students. I'm going to price it at something that I feel like will be really juicy for them, maybe $500 to $700, see how it goes. And then someone else might do that same exercise and say, all right, I'm going to aim for 100 people in my initial cohort. I'm going to price it at $2,000. And this course is going to be 3 or 4 weeks. And it's going to be doable for working professionals. So the hours are going to be set in a way that makes sense for my target students to be able to attend. It depends on your situation and your student situation. And then you use those as guardrails to decide the mechanics of price, length, intensity, how project-driven it is, whether you want coaches or not. All of those are actually quite flexible as long as you keep your end goal in mind, which is I need to offer something that feels very valuable for a target student who's about to pay me their hard-earned cash money to take my course.
I'm remembering some lessons specifically that you had given us where we were actually meant to move a couple levers and sort of scales up and down to determine what our perfect price point would be, the size of the cohort, all that kind of stuff. And it's interesting because those specific exercises where we had to actually in real time make decisions and also in real time share those decisions and get real feedback. I mean, that's really what the power of the cohort-based model is. And I'm still sticking with that. Even today, I've taken dozens of online courses and I wouldn't even begin to tell you certain components of those because I was just watching, moving on to the next lesson. Here I am actually doing the work, which is the real benefit here. Let's go over like what a typical week might look like for a person teaching a multi-week cohort-based course. You had done when you were teaching us, and this is how we structured it as well for our first group, which was meeting twice a week. The first part of the week was going to be more lessons, but it wasn't just like watch a lecture. Let's go over that first component and that first part of the week where you are teaching something, but because it's cohort-based, can you go over how we can uniquely teach something and the breakouts and some of the other interactive components that we can include in the lessons?
I have a method of lecturing online that I call the state change method. So if you think about Zoom calls that you're usually on, whether they're webinars or, you know, Zoom lectures, it's usually one person talking the entire time. And it's really hard to sit still staring at your screen for an hour and a half, 2 hours. Your mind just wanders. So the state change method was a reaction to that. And with the state change method, if you imagine, let's say, a line of lecturing, there's state changes that punctuate that line. There's never more than 3 to 5 minutes that go by of lecturing without some kind of state change. So a state change is anything that interrupts that monologue. It could be, hey, everyone, here's a question. Put your answer in the Zoom chat box. Or unmute yourself and share your answer to something. Or it's switching speakers. So instead of just one speaker, it's having the moderator chime in. Or it's a breakout where you put everyone into a room for 5 minutes to answer a question and then come back and share out. or it's a guided exercise where everyone stays in Zoom gallery view. We all silently work together and I'm timing, you know, 1 minute to do this exercise. The minute is up. All right, next we're going to do this thing and we all silently work together. So those are all examples of state changes that help to create a lively, fast-paced rhythm during a live workshop for a cohort-based course. That sense of rhythm is really important. It's pacing that helps your students feel like you're keeping them on their toes. And this helps them stay mentally engaged and it helps them stay present. And it really combats the lethargy that can kind of sink in if you're just sitting at your computer, you know, staring straight ahead at a screen.
Yeah, I mean, we implemented state changes every couple minutes, if possible, within some of our lessons. And the cool thing is, if you do this right, you hear from the students at the end saying things like, oh, wow, are we already done? Like, oh, I had like this went by so quickly. And that's kind of what you want to feel, because then it doesn't ever feel like a bore or like a just a lecture at a university anymore. It's actually interactive. And so you had mentioned breakout sessions that we found to be very, very powerful. Can you talk a little bit more deeply about how breakout sessions are run and how to come back into the room together and then continue on with your lessons from there?
Breakout sessions are a great way for students to practice the lesson that you just taught them. Let's say that you're teaching a course on sales and pitching, and you just went over doing a teardown of what a great pitch looks like and some of the key elements. Instead of just moving on to the next thing, what you could do is do a breakout where for, let's say, 7 minutes, you put students into groups of 3 to 5 and everyone works on sharing their pitch with each other and giving each other feedback, pointing out, here's the parts that made my eyes light up, here are the parts that were confusing or kind of made my eyes glaze over. This idea of working and practicing and putting these lessons into practice is a really powerful way for students to apply those lessons to themselves and to their own situation and therefore really internalize that material. Once the breakout is over, let's say the 7 minutes have passed, everyone comes back into the main room. And that's another opportunity for really rich learnings. Because when you invite students to share out, hey, what did you talk about in your breakout? What were some key takeaways? Or what was a great piece of feedback that someone gave you? Or what was something that you changed your mind about? These are all chances for the broader group to hear from everyone else, to hear from all the other students, and see how other students interpreted the prompt. See what other students thought of that you might have never thought of. I think that the share outs after a breakout are some of the most interesting parts of running a course on the creator side, because inevitably your students think of things that you didn't even think of. And I hear this from instructors all the time. Lee Jin was saying the other day, so Lee's a venture capitalist. She used to be at Andreessen Horowitz. Now she runs her own VC firm. She coined the term passion economy, and she has a course on the creator economy on Maven. And she was saying that she learned more and just as much from her students as they did from her. Because all of her students thought of unique use cases for what she was talking about. They thought of edge cases. They thought of examples and industries that she didn't think of. And she said it sparked so many ideas for her that she ended up writing other great essays because of what she was seeing from her own students. So if you can imagine that being that, the share outs after a breakout being that impactful for an instructor, it's incredible for a student. Where usually if you're learning something by yourself, you're not seeing what other people are doing with that topic or that prompt or, you know, how they're thinking about things.
That's so true. I mean, those were some of my most favorite parts from the last cohort that we ran was during the share outs. And in addition to the learnings that are happening from the team and from the other students with amongst each other, just the comments from people supporting those who are also in the course, you know, the group support from each other was very apparent during those share outs. Congratulations and wow, that's excellent. Or even additional feedback coming from those who were sort of sitting there and listening to those who were presenting. So, so fun. And those breakouts were definitely key. And I know it can feel a little weird, like forcing people to talk to each other. I think that was the thing that I had to get over, because being an introvert myself, I almost am deathly afraid of that. And I remember sitting in class as a kid, never raising my hand because I didn't want to be put on the spot. But part of your role as the course creator is almost to put people on the spot, to force them in a safe space to be able to learn and present and learn from each other and connect. Do you have any thoughts on that idea of, you know, the interactivity with those who may be a little bit scared to do so within a student base?
I love that you shared that you are an introvert and never raise your hand. I am also that person. So even now, you know, I last summer took a core-based course from one of my former clients, Susie Patiz, who's the founder and CEO of Poopery. And she has a course called Alive OS, 8 weeks. And I went into course thinking, you know, I'm gonna learn what I can, but I don't really want to participate. I went in kind of already hesitating on that front. And I remember the first group meeting that we had. I think it was 8 or 9 people in my pod. Everyone else had shared. I think it was 1 hour. Everyone else had shared. I thought I had gotten away with not having to share. And right at the end, I think there was 3 minutes left or something, the coach said, "Hey, Wes, you know, you haven't shared yet. Would you like to share?" It was like this fork in the road where part of me was like, "No, I'm just going to not share." And the other part of me was like, "Well, Wes, you are here to learn. Why don't you give it a try? Just share something and have the full course experience." So I decided to share. And once I started sharing, it was like everything just came pouring out. And the group was so supportive as I was talking that it encouraged me to keep going and to share more and to dive deeper. And I'm so glad that I shared in that first week, in that first group meeting, because for the rest of the 7 weeks, the weekly group meeting was the highlight of those months and the highlight of the course. There were actually times when I missed lecture, me being a bad student. I actually missed some weeks of lecture, but I never missed the group meeting of the week because it was so transformative for me and so special to have a space where I could talk openly with other people who were thinking about the same thing, learning about the same thing, that shared context. We had, you know, a shared language from the course, that I moved stuff in my schedule. I scheduled around that group meeting to never miss it. I think that experience of going forward and leaning in as opposed to leaning back when you have an opportunity to participate, that's really what you want to do as a student if you're in a core-based course. And I think on the facilitator side, the creator side, the moderator side, our job as instructors is to create that space where your students do feel that excitement that I think came across in my voice because I'm thinking about it now and you know, talked with my hands, can't see me because I'm, you know, audio, but pretty excited. You know, our job as instructors is to create that environment where your students feel like they want to show up, they want to share, they want to open up, and to gently encourage that. And different students, you might have to encourage it in different ways, but giving a gentle nudge, a gentle prodding is usually good for both the student and all the other students who are going to get to benefit from that student really leaning in and participating.
Thank you for sharing that. I mean, I experienced the same thing. And it's interesting because in a couple of our boot camps, when we were collecting feedback at the end, people had said exactly that. Oh, I was kind of reluctant. I didn't really want to share. I just kind of wanted to coast and listen and watch everybody else. But then once they almost were put in a position to share out, they felt that it was just some of the best of the stuff. And in fact, we got a lot of feedback that was like, we want more interactive moments. Like we need more of it. it's just so special when it happens. Let's continue talking about, so let's say first part of the week is lessons with a lot of these state changes and purposeful interruptions to get people to interact with each other and whatnot, to learn, to make progress. Second part of the week, which was interesting and we've also implemented, was more of a co-working situation where people could come together and actually find the time to work. And then on top of that, the homework. And homework is another one of those words that can often scare some people, but it was absolutely valuable to have space to actually turn in. And also, I think the deadline was, 3:30 p.m. on Sunday every week with you guys. And we scrambled to get those things turned in, but it was so helpful. Can you talk more about the idea of having these other components to help students beyond just like lessons and breakouts, but you have co-working, you have homework. How are they structured? How and why do they exist?
Having asynchronous work, whether it's readings that you're doing on your own, videos that you're watching on your own, homework that you're doing on your own, those are all important ways for your student to percolate the material that you might have gone over in a live setting. So there's a great stat somewhere about how people need to hear information a dozen or so times before they really internalize it. So if your students are hearing something for the first time in a live workshop, let's say the workshop's an hour and a half, that's not enough time for them to experience true behavior change that is actually going to last. They need to percolate with that idea. They need to incorporate it into their lives. They need to think about it and really get used to that idea. Homework, projects, having milestones for, you know, and different deadlines that get students to do the work. The more that students think about a new idea, incorporate it into their lives, the more likely that they're going to remember it and be able to add it permanently to their toolbox. The idea of deadlines and due dates within a course too really help to spur this, because we've all procrastinated to do something until the last minute. With a core-based course and adult learning, continuing education in general, you can't really force people to do anything. I mean, you can say this is a deadline. There's no punishment per se. Whereas I think in K through 12 higher education, it's much more stick driven. If we think about carrots versus sticks, it's much more stick driven, because if you don't do this thing, well, you know, I'm going to fail you, or you're going to get a C, or eyes in the professor, or, you know, you're not going to be able to graduate on time. So those are all fear driven motivators that are sticks. Whereas when your students are working professionals who are doing your course basically for fun, you know, for professional development to improve themselves, they're here because they want to be here. You need to use carrots, not sticks, to motivate them. And creating different media for your students to interact with the material, different ways to create a sense of urgency, whether it's, hey, you know, we have live workshops. If you want to participate live, you have to show up at this time, you know, on this day, or, hey, your projects are due on this date. If you want feedback on your projects, be sure to submit by then. These are all more positive ways to motivate your students and to make sure that you're giving them a range of different media to learn from, because not everyone learns best in live situations or when they're put on the spot or purely in group work. It's usually a combination of doing those things, the group work, the live pieces, etc., plus also reading on your own and thinking on your own and practicing on your own. And there are situations where you working on something uninterrupted for an hour or two by yourself, let's say you're drafting an about page. That's one of David Perel in Rite of Passage, one of his projects is to redo your own about page on your website, right? He talks about personal credibility, personal branding, and then students do this project. You could say, hey, you know, we're only going to do stuff live and you have 10 minutes to redo your about page, but is that really the best way for your students to learn this particular concept? Probably not. So a student giving them a chance to work on their own solo a couple hours to really dig into rewriting that copy, rethinking about their positioning, thinking about credibility signals, et cetera, and then turning that in, that's probably a better way to learn that topic. So as a creator, you want to offer these different ways.
Super helpful, Wes. Thank you so much. And there's obviously so much more we could cover. I do have one final thing I want to ask you. But before that, can you talk about Maven real quick? I want people to go to maven.com to learn more. But what can they get when they go there? What should they look out for? How can they work with you?
Maven is a platform that makes it really easy for creators to build, launch, and host their core-based courses. So we offer software and tooling that brings all the different complex pieces into one place. So it's really easy for you to manage. We will eventually be a marketplace that will help connect students with instructors. And we also offer know-how and content and resources on how to build a great core-based course. So the course that Pat and the SBI team participated in was part of a multi-week free course that we offer to creators who are interested in building a core-based course. So if you're excited about that, you can check out our website where we're accepting applications for our upcoming September cohort.
Thank you, Wes. I appreciate that. And the final question I want to ask you was with relation to how do you close the cohort-based course with your group of students? Because with the DIY, you know, there's usually a final lesson, here are your next steps. But I imagine that there's a lot more opportunity to do something even bigger, even more special for those who have just participated in a multi-day, multi-week situation with you. How do you end, or how do you celebrate that with your students?
For our own course, which is 6 weeks, in the future, we'll probably trim it to 3 weeks, going back full circle to how the different mechanics are all flexible as long as your end goal is kept in mind. So we're changing the number of weeks here. But at the end of our course, we do a graduation. So our graduation is coming up in 2 weeks. And the graduation is a chance for all the students to come together and reflect on how far you've come in this course and reflect on the key takeaways that you want to remind your future self. So future Wes, I want you to remember this because this was a really important thing that I learned. And it's a chance to celebrate that, for us at least, this is just the beginning. The students that we work with, who are, actually creators, are going to go off and build amazing things. And so for other instructors and creators, your own students, this is just one step in their, you know, in a much longer journey, maybe one course that they're taking from you that is in their journey. And you might have other courses and other offerings to help serve them. We like celebrating at the end and ending on a high note. One of my philosophies is always end on a high note where you're throwing confetti in the air and then you wrap up. A lot of times course creators want to continue the momentum, but if you don't have the right levers in place with the timing, everyone getting together, it can kind of be a deflating balloon where it's like, oh, well, let's just keep Slack open, and you keep it open, but it just slowly dies down, or very quickly dies down rather, because there's nothing that's really bringing everyone back in the same way that in the way that during the course there were levers bringing people back. So in terms of how to end, one is end on a high note. Two is, if you do want to keep a community going, that's great. But you want to think about what is the right way to keep the community going and how do you set expectations? With the Alton Bay, for example, always, you know, on the last day of the course, we had so many students, you know, i.e. recent alumni who just graduated, say, please, can we continue this? Can we just leave everything open? And we found from running many, many sessions that once the course ends, students need something different. It's no longer that 4 weeks where they're committed to the course. It's now, you know, back to regular daily life where you have other responsibilities, other obligations, et cetera. So we move students into an alumni community that has its own separate offering. So instead of trying to continue the course and make it, you know, a bad version of that, we give them a new offering, which is entirely designed for alumni with a different set of expectations and different ways to keep alumni engaged. We have an alumni newsletter, at least when I was there, that went out monthly. There's different alumni-only events, ways to meet people who've taken other courses within the Akimbo ecosystem besides Alt MBA, offering something that is appropriately designed for your community is really good because you want to create something that is actually sustainable for you. And if you don't do that, you risk setting the wrong expectations and then feeling really obligated to continue entertaining your students in a way that isn't really sustainable.
Wes, this has been absolutely incredible. Thank you for helping us figure out how we might be able to wrap up our cohort-based course. So as we wrap up this episode, I want to personally, again, thank you for the work that you've done and the work that you're doing. You've helped me and the team at SPI create some really, really memorable lessons and experiences for people through our own cohort-based courses. And we're going to continue to do them. It's just such a fun way to do it. And in fact, we had just run one about creating online courses called Heroic Online Courses. And I was just planning on leading the charge on the first one and then letting the team run with the next ones. But honestly, I've loved it so, so much that I'm going to continue to, at least for the foreseeable future, still lead those lessons and be there because it was so much fun. So thank you for all of it. I just appreciate it so much.
I love hearing that. That really, really makes my day.
Thank you, Wes. Maven.com, everybody. And we'll wrap up with the show as we normally do right now. Thanks, Wes. All right. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Wes. Wes is just such an amazing wealth of knowledge, especially when it comes to learning online. And it's no wonder why Seth and her have worked together to create Alt MBA and now Maven.com, where you can go to learn and also create your cohort-based course and be an instructor. Again, maven.com. And if you want to check out some of our own things going on where we can help you in this kind of style. I'd highly recommend you check out the courses and the learnings that are available over at smartpassiveincome.com. We'll have links on the show notes. Again, smartpassiveincome.com/session513. Again, smartpassiveincome.com/session513. We'll also make sure to include links to our programs and stuff in the show notes so you can click on them even right from your device. And thank you all for listening, and I appreciate you. And thank you again, Wes, for sharing some of your time with us, because I know you're very busy helping new instructors get what they need to crush it with their cohort-based courses. So take care, everybody. Thank you so much. I look forward to serving you this coming Friday in our Friday follow-up episode, as well as next week, where we have another great interview, something that I actually haven't heard anybody talk about online, coming next week. And I hope you enjoy it. It's very, very important. So take care. Thanks so much. Peace out. And as always, Team Flynn for the win. Thanks for listening to the Smart Passive Income Podcast at smartpassiveincome.com. I'm your host, Pat Flynn. Our senior producer is Sarah Jane Hess. Our series producer is David Grabowski. And our executive producer is Matt Gartland. Sound editing by Duncan Brown. The Smart Passive Income Podcast is a production of SPI Media. We'll catch you in the next session. Entrepreneurs, what is the smart way to save when your growing business takes you on the road? Whether you're going to events or conventions or you're speaking somewhere, no matter what it is, you need to sign up for a free membership with Hertz Business Rewards. Yep, Hertz Rental Car created a program to help small and mid-sized businesses save money. Work trips, client meetings, industry conferences. With Hertz Business Rewards, you save at least 20% every time you rent a car, and you'll save on more than just the daily rate. Members earn credits redeemable toward free rental days, and it's also free to add an additional driver if any additional coworkers come along. And for those Gen Z entrepreneurs out there, no young renter fees. Plus, sign up for Hertz Business Rewards today and earn 3x credit during your first 90 days. These benefits add up to big savings that stack more dollars in your wallet. Join for free at hertz.com/businessrewards. Applies to base rate, taxes, fees, and options excluded. Additional terms and exclusions apply. Visit hertz.com/businessrewards to learn more. Starting a business can feel daunting and confusing, but it doesn't have to be. That's why Terry Rice started the Launch Your Business podcast, another awesome show from the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Each week, Terry shares strategic actions, specific tools, and what he refers to as high-performance mindsets that allow you to thrive under pressure. Recent guests include rapper T.I., Amy Porterfield, and yours truly. And Terry frequently publishes value pack solo shows too, like this one titled How to Write Proposals That Get Accepted and Don't Take Forever to Write. Great stuff. So make sure you listen in to Launch Your Business right now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher.